Welcome back to the Renaissance. Last time, how are you, Ray? Let's go. How are you, my little?
Yeah, doing good. Crazy week, but other than that, how are you doing?
What's crazy in your week?
Don't laugh at me. Don't mock me.
It's going to be hard. I'm not sure I can sign up for this.
Actually, now I can't say that out loud because of all the work that I don't do on this show. No, I haven't had an interview this week. I have an interview next week. I've had to read a ton of books. You know, me and Alphabet doesn't really get along. So it's been a struggle. I tried Braille. That didn't take. So I finally went to audiobooks. But no, just busy, just concerned. You read for fun. I struggle to read for work. So we're just very different people. Very different people. But I'm glad we get along.
That's a rough week. Oh, such a busy week. What'd you have to do? I had to read a book.
Two books. Not one. Two. And one of them was a graphic novel. I don't think you understand.
There's people out there working real jobs, blue-collar jobs.
Making nothing.
Making decisions, you know. Lots of stress. You're like, oh, fuck, I had to read two books this week.
I did have something good happen.
Heather, I mean, the top 1% income earners in the country, and my work is I had to read two books this week and talk to somebody about the books. You know, it's tough, man.
But they were books I was already going to read. It's complicated. I don't know. But the point is everybody went back to school this week, so it's back to me and Finn and sitting in my underwear. So I like to change my answer. It's been a pretty good week.
Got some new shelves and cupboards in your little room closet there too on your left. They're not normally in the frame.
Heather's been moving. I don't know. Someone's moving something. The girls have been coming down here. I think it's the edibles. I think they're trying to find the edibles.
Oh, right. Because they want to eat them.
I guess I don't. Or they want to save me from myself and throw them all away. I'll cut a fool. You mess with my edibles, I'll cut a fool. Anyway, I'm done now. I'm done.
So Leonardo. I'm always good. You know me. Leonardo did not want to paint Isabella d'Este's portrait we mentioned last time because it was not challenging enough to him. But a couple of paintings that he did paint during this period, one of them at least was possibly the one that we mentioned in the last episode for the secretary of the King of France, a guy called Robert Tay. He was doing this thing called Madonna of the Yarn Winder.
Really? I mean, can Christians be any more boring? That's just my take on it. Sorry.
They can be very boring. Trust me on this. Very, very boring. Mm. Gotcha. Friar Pietro, Isabella's agent, just to remind people, in one of his letters to her when he was trying to get Leonardo to finish her painting, mentioned to her that there's this little picture he is working on of a Madonna who is seated as if she were about to spin yarn, and the child has placed his foot in the basket of yarns and has grasped the yarn winder and stares attentively at the four spokes, which are in the form of a cross, and he smiles and grips it tightly as if he were longing for this cross, not wishing to yield it to his mother, who appears to want to take it away from him.
I don't know about yarn, but I do know that I'm feeling yarn. Who in the fuck cares? A little baby Jesus playing with the yarn, playing with the thing. I don't even know what the yarn. I guess you wind yarn on it. Fuck, I don't know. But I'm like, this is what someone said to Leonardo. Hey, I want you to paint this. And he said, great fucking idea. Oh, by the way, are you still the secretary to the King of France? Oh, you are? I'll get right on it, boss.
Well, I'm guessing that this was one of these commissions where Leonardo was in control, because it is, unlike the boring as ass portrait of Isabella d'Este, this is actually really interesting and innovative construction. So Leonardo is cooking this up. He's doing stuff in these these paintings that have never been done before. He's introducing new kinds of symbolism, new kinds of actions, both for Mary and baby Jesus. He's doing new things with the backgrounds.
Drop this the Halo card, for fuck's sake.
More Halos.
So, yeah, plates.
Now, the thing is, there are dozens of surviving copies of this painting.
Right.
40-odd, I read, and wow. I looked at a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredibly influential, this painting, particularly in Spain. The Spanish loved this painting, and they all wanted a copy of it for themselves.
Sure.
Why? Who the fuck knows? But it must have been – well, this gets back to the point that it must have been innovative in the way it's depicting Mary and baby Jesus. It was a talking piece, and everyone wanted their own copy of this talking piece.
Yes.
It was like I don't know, what's a good modern analogy? Something everyone wants, they want to be the first people in town to have. It's like when an Apple Watch came out or the iPhone first came out,
crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
This is a status thing. If you're one of the first people, I remember, do you remember the first iPhone you saw in real life?
I remember people went bonkers, yeah, and all the techs where I work got the iPhone.
I was at a tech conference. They hadn't even come out in Australia yet because there was a lag.
Sure.
And there was an American woman who came to a conference and showed me her iPhone and I was playing with it and flicking through it and the way it scrolled and the way it, you know, you could scroll through the contacts.
Breaking and in boundaries. Fact, yeah.
Never forgiven her because she actually had in her contacts, I think it was Tony Visconti was in her contacts. And I saw the name. She was like some big PR woman in California, in LA, I think. And I was scrolling through her contacts and I saw Tony Visconti's name. And I was like, fuck me, is that the Tony Visconti?
Right.
And she was like, yeah, you know who Tony Visconti is? And I was like, of course I know who Tony Visconti is. He produced, actually, fuck me, no, it wasn't Tony Visconti. It was Bob Ezrin. And I was like, fuck yes, I know who Bob Ezrin was. I mean, Bob Ezrin was to Lou Reed and Alice Cooper what Tony Visconti was to David Bowie. So both record producers produced a lot of their greatest works in the 70s and 80s.
Nice.
I was like, fuck, I'm a huge Bob Ezrin fan. He also did Kiss albums, a lot of Lou Reed albums, well, a couple of Lou Reed albums, a lot of Alice Cooper albums.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, well, I can, and I was, you know, doing G'day World at the time. She said, I can organize an interview for you with Bob Ezrin.
Wow.
And she said he'd be rapt because no one knows who he is, like, you know, outside of groups of musicians.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, fuck yes, hook me up with Bob Ezrin. It never happened.
Could have been a career maker or whatever the proper term is. I don't
know. Well, it just would have been fun. Anyway, how'd I get onto that? Yarnwinder. Oh, yeah. Symbol, status symbol. So the Madonna of the Yarnwinder painting was the Apple iPhone of Spain in the early 1500s. Now, of all of the copies that exist out there, obviously Leonardo didn't do all of them. He may have done two. He may have done one. Maybe he didn't do any of them. We don't really know. Scholars are still debating which, if any, of these he did, or he did any of, you know, any part of the, there's two in particular that they think he may have had a hand in. How much he did, how much his assistants did, how much other people, we don't really know. It's still a matter of huge debate.
Right. But some people would argue that that is the wrong question to ask. Why? Because if you remember, in the last episode, we talked about when he got to Florence in 1500, he set up a collaborative workshop, just like when he was with Verrocchio. So it's a place where you go, you exchange ideas, you work on things together. He taught these young men his various things that he had learned over the years, you know, the psychological narrative, the light, and all that good stuff. But the point is, no one's... and that too. No one's... I'm thinking of a joke to do with paint and penis. But anyway, no, I won't do that now. But anyway, no, but... there's not going to be one person just working on one thing and then it goes out the door. No, this is a shop and they're all learning. And so many artists would have touched it. And like you just said, maybe Leo did, maybe he didn't. Maybe he just said, oh, put a little something there, put a little something there. Maybe he never picked up a brush and touched it, or maybe he just guided them. But the point is, we don't know. But like, as we're going to see, this painting gets copied over and over and over and over and over again, which is why it's so influential. But going back to the heart of the matter, we really don't know what he painted, if anything at all, or was he just the, you know, the idea guy behind it?
Yeah, so you're right. So Leonardo had assistants doing things, and, you know, he didn't know that 500 years later people were going to care about which brush strokes he painted and which brush strokes other people painted. People then probably didn't care. It was a painting from the workshop of Leonardo da Vinci. That's it had the stamp finished, on the back. Yeah,
exactly. It's a finished product. That's all that matters. Was it amazing? Was it shit? Whatever. That's pretty much how the conversation starts and stops.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, these days, obviously, we care about it because there's money attached to it. And there's money attached. Like, if a Sally painted it, it's probably going to sell for, you know, $100,000. If Leonardo painted it, it's going to sell for $100 million. Even if, you know, the average punter can't tell the difference between the two, that's just the way it works.
In the art world, yeah.
Now, the two versions of the Yardwinder paintings that are most commonly considered to be the best candidates to be the work of Leonardo, all or some thereof, are the Buccleuch Madonna.
Right.
Buccleuch, there's a moose loose about the hoose in Buccleuch. And the Lansdowne Madonna.
Yeah, I can say that one. Yeah.
They were hung side by side, like our genitals, at a huge Leonardo da Vinci exhibition in 2019 at the Louvre, which unfortunately we missed. We were there in 2018. We missed it in 2019.
It that much.
That much.
Yeah.
Now, like his two Madonna of the Grotto paintings that we talked about some time ago, these two look almost identical, but have slightly different backgrounds, slightly different lighting, but apart from that, the main subject of it, Mary and baby Jesus and the Yardwinder, almost the Yardwinders was a blues band in Florence at the time, so they didn't want to be that. The first version, when he got the commission, Madonna and the Yardwinders, he actually painted her with his blues band, Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton.
Jimmy
Page was on guitar for a while there.
I would prefer that, actually. That
yeah, cool. Yeah. I think Ginger Baker may have played drums at one point. But that, and he had them all in the painting. It was a masterpiece. Yeah. And he had her singing vocals. She had a harmonica.
Like The Last Supper. Right.
Yeah. But they were like, no, not the Yard Bird Winders. Right. What the fuck that was all. So now the version that most art historians seem to think is the original LDV is the Buccleuch Madonna. On walnut, which it's one of my favourite, how I like to get off, oil on my walnuts. But before we get into the painting itself, I want to talk about the story of its theft.
Oh,
because nothing is more fun than the theft of a Leonardo da Vinci.
Sure. It seems to happen a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, this one, the Buccleuch, now hangs in the Scottish National Gallery in Edinburgh on loan from the 10th Duke of Buccleuch.
I am the Duke of Buccleuch. I would beat him up just for having that name. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I actually watched a couple of YouTube interviews with the Duke of Buccleuch.
Oh, okay.
And he's a very funny, foppish British, like you'd expect a lord.
Right.
Hello. It's a very high voice like this and a bit of a lip. His words are very little like that. Hello. Very good. Very nice to see you. Yeah, he was doing some, I don't know, environmental reclamation project or something and old mine in his estates. What we're doing here, you see, is we're moving things around and we're trying to repair the damage that was done by this mine. It's very different.
What they had at the edit out was someone tried to hand him a shovel. Oh, no, dear boy, I simply wouldn't know what to do with it.
There's actually There's actually footage of like a whole bunch of workmen in hard hats and fluoro and stuff, and he's in there with his hunting coat on and his pipe. Right. What I think you should do here is dig this part over here, if you wouldn't mind. So good, jolly good, old chap.
I have a good feeling about that spot right there. Get the shovels in there.
So this painting hung in his ancestral home in Drumlanrig Castle, Dumfries and Galloway in Scotland, until it was stolen in 2003.
Oh, what bastards, what clever bastards came up with this idea?
We'll get to that in a second, but it had been hanging in their collection since 1767.
Is that a long time?
Third Duke of Buccleuch married Lady Elizabeth Montagu. It was the Buccleuch-Montagu marriage. Marriage.
Alliance.
Marriage.
Marriage.
She was the heiress to a massive art collection owned by her parents, the Duke and Duchess of Montagu, the Duke of Montagu. Now, this Madonna of the Yarn Winder was bought at auction in Paris in 1756 by them from the sale of a collection of Marie-Joseph Duc d'Ostune et Tédilade, who was its earliest documented owner. Right. In 2003, the Buccleuch Madonna was stolen from Drumlanrig Castle. By two thieves who got in by posing as tourists, then they grabbed it, climbed out of a window with it.
Sure, that's what I would
Two tourists from New Zealand saw them climbing out the window with this painting under their arm. Uh-oh. And they said, "Don't worry, love, we're the police, this is just practice."
And the New Zealanders, and I loved New Zealand when I went there, they went, "Oh, yeah, no, sure, that sounds right. Okay, carry on, have a good day."
Hey, yeah. You're stealing it for practice, are you? No, that's Irish. Hold on. New Zealand. Hold on. New Zealand. Channeling Taika Waititi here. Socks. Yeah. Oh, you just stolen it. Huh. Oh, that's okay then.
Practice.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, bro. You're stealing it, bro. Give me a sheep, bro. Get me sheep. How the fuck a sheep, bro? Sorry.
So one of them had the ability to stay calm and say, "Don't worry, love. We're police. This is just practice." And they got away with it.
They got away with it.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
4 years later.
Sure.
Chartered loss adjuster acting for the Duke of Buccleuch in shoes was contacted by an English lawyer who claimed that he could get the painting back to them within 72 hours if they paid a lot of money.
This now, is not lawyer, ransom. I know someone. If you pay, I did nothing to do with it, but if you pay, I can get it back. This is not ransom. Don't use the R word.
Yeah. I know a guy who knows a guy who says he can get it.
Right.
The lawyer, Marshall Ronald of Skelmersdale, Lancashire, was visited by two undercover policemen then who posed as an art expert and an agent for the Duke.
Right.
The painting was then taken to a lawyer's office in Glasgow, which was raided by police officers from four anti-crime agencies.
Hear, hear.
Four arrests were made, including two solicitors from different firms who were involved in this.
You always arrest a lawyer. Always.
The Scotsman newspaper described the Glasgow firm as one of the country's most successful and respected law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And quoted a source from the law firm saying that their arrested member was not involved in any criminal act, but was acting as a go-between for two parties by scrutinising a contract which would have allowed an English firm to secure legal repatriation of the painting from an unidentified party.
Sounds right. Above board.
Unfortunately, the ninth Duke of Buccleuch died before the painting was recovered, so he never got to see it again.
Oh.
The 10th Duke of Buccleuch did manage to get it back. It was then lent to the National Gallery of Scotland in 2009, where it remains. Now, in 2010, Marshall Ronald, the lawyer, was cleared of the charge of holding the Duke to ransom.
Right.
In 2013, he mounted legal action against the Duke and the Chief Constable of Dumfries and Galloway, trying to demand compensation of £4 million, which he claims was promised as a ransom in the meeting he had with undercover police. But the judge threw it out. The judge said those arrangements were no more than a scheme designed and controlled by the police in an attempt to obtain the return of the stolen property. He was like, hold on, in the sting, they promised me £4 million. And he goes, well, it was a sting, you stupid fucker. Yeah. That was the sting.
That's like me saying to the judge, look, Your Honor, I personally did not kidnap the dog, but I did call the dog owner and say, I can get it back for you for a fee, but I didn't do it. They promised the money. I didn't do anything wrong. I'd like my £4.2 million or whatever. Fuck you.
Oh, it's like the drug dealer who was trying to buy a kilo of coke from the police and he got busted. He goes, but I want the coke. They promised me the coke. I want the coke. Yeah. Where's the coke?
And I never got the coke. So you can't arrest me because I'm coke free. And that's the problem.
Anyway. So back to the painting itself.
Please.
So,
God.
Unlike the portrait of Isabella, it actually has a really interesting composition. So the yarn winder, as mentioned before in the letter from Pietro, it's a thing that it's like a long stick and it has two crossbars, one at the top and one at the bottom.
Oh, gotcha.
So it looks like a sword with a handguard or wrist guard, but it has one on the other end as well. For a midget, yeah. And I looked up some videos of how you use these things. Right. And you basically wind yarn on it, like when you're
That's exciting.
Yeah, when you're refining wool, you've got the wheel and you put all the raw wool on it and you turn it into a little strand of yarn and then you put it on this thing to wind it on this thing.
Nice and
then
organized.
You can get it off this thing when you're doing your knitting or your crocheting or whatever.
But you can store it on a shelf or wherever you've condensed it, boom, ready to go. Not bad.
Now, apparently the reason baby Jesus is looking at this and holding this in the painting is its symbolism. Right. Now, this is the first time, I think, anyone had used this kind of symbolism for baby Jesus because it looks a little bit like a crucifix. Symbolism in paintings of Jesus, obviously, had been around for a long time, and we've talked about some of those paintings. There's the fruit with all the red seeds in it. What do you call that? Persimmons? No.
Oh, shit.
What is the fruit that they always use? It's blood, red, anyway.
Right.
Symbolism. Greek myth. It's about somebody rising from the and rebirth. And anyway.
All this time.
Piece of fruit that go back to Greek mythology represented rebirth. And I can't remember the name of it right now. We've seen that used in Jesus paintings, et cetera, et cetera. There's vines and snakes and blood and skulls, but no one had done this before. I think this is one of the reasons it's interesting. Now, it's also represents Mary's job as a famous seamstress in Bethlehem. You know, all the women, when they wanted to go out somewhere special, they go to Mary. She made, you know, really high class dresses. Very sexy numbers. She had a reputation. Not just, you know,
getting
knocked up when she was just, you know, unmarried. But she had two she was a whore, but a seamstress. Yeah. A dirty whore, but also a famous seamstress.
Great seamstress.
And Jesus is also symbolic of Jesus's lifelong obsession with being crucified. Like, not many people know this, but it was his life's ambition to get crucified one day. Like, people were like, when he was a little kid, people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up, baby Jesus? You want to be a fireman, an astronaut, a policeman? He goes, father, I just want one thing, father. What is it, baby Jesus? He goes, I just want to be crucified one day. He goes, really? That's weird. It's a very strange ambition. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's my calling.
And that
just to be crucified one day.
Exactly, and that would explain why he seems to be stroking the yarn.
Oh, he's stroking.
Winder. He's not just holding
even
it. His hands are like going.
God tried to talk him out of it. God was like, listen.
Don't,
There's lots of different things. Yeah, you're my son. You're my only
you could do anything.
Son. Right. And I don't even know what begotten means. What the fuck is begotten? Every son is begotten. I'm your only begotten son. Does that mean I have sons that aren't begotten? Ungotten? Right? Do I have ungotten sons? I've got begotten. Do I have any C-gotten?
Right.
Less-gotten? I don't know. What's
ungotten?
What's the opposite of begotten? My only begotten son.
Created?
What does begotten mean?
Petri dish? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I created Adam. Isn't he kind of my son, too, though, if I created him?
Is he the only non-begotten person?
Begotten. Anyway... and Jesus was like, no, really, the crucifixion thing, I think, is my thing. I feel this calling. I think I could play the fuck out of that crucifix.
Well. It's in my diary every day. Yeah. I write about it.
Like, you know, Leonardo painted The Last Supper, and it only lasted 20 years, but it's the definitive version. Yes. 500 years later, the definitive version of The Last Supper. I think my crucifixion, like a lot of people have been crucified before me.
Sure, lots of them.
But
Caesar almost was.
And I'm not going to disparage their crucifixions. They were fine crucifixions. They did a good job.
As far as they go.
They did as good a job as they could do with the tools that they had and the talents that they had. But honestly,
I know this is a stretch.
I could really take it further. I think I can do something with crucifixion that no one else has ever. They'll be talking about it forever.
They'll be talking about it forever.
Yeah.
They'll write books. Every Sunday they'll
movies,
get together. They'll dress
documentaries.
Up. Yes. Oh, some guy in Australia.
Some Australian guy gets a documentary about.
Yeah.
I really think
it's going to be big.
I can own this. Like, people will forever.
They won't think about crucifixion
without thinking me.
Thank you.
God was like, I'm not sure that's really something that you want, is it?
What comes after the crucifixion?
There's nothing. That's it. That's the whole thing. Well, then you resurrect me as a god.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He goes, fair
that's
enough.
Your part, God, but this part, this is my decision. I think this is the way I want to go.
This is how I want to go out. Yeah. In all seriousness, apparently the yarn has something to do with Mary's anti-type.
Right.
As Eve.
Yes.
You didn't learn about anti-types when you were a Catholic for 5 minutes?
Flesh that out for me, please.
So there's this thing in Christianity, and it goes way back to the early Christian fathers.
Right.
Obviously, after a while, Christianity had been around for a while. And after a while, people started to read the Old Testament. Now, you've got to remember this, that most Christians today and 2,000 years ago weren't Jews. They were...
Sticky point. Yeah.
You know, they were...
Un-Jews. Gentiles.
Yes. The original ones were Gentiles. And then obviously after Constantine and Theodosius and it becomes the state religion, everyone gets forced, and except the Jews, forced to become Christians. And then you have generational people grow up in it. But people weren't Jews, and consequently they didn't read the Old Testament.
Right.
Like, the Old Testament was the Tanakh of the Jews. The Christians didn't bother reading it. They had the New Testament. They didn't reading the Old Testament. They didn't know the Old Testament.
Right.
But eventually, some of them were like, oh, maybe we should go back and read these things. And they go back and they'd read what they called the Old Testament. And they would, you know, they're like, huh, that's funny. A lot of the stories from the New Testament are very similar to the stories in the Old Testament.
Huh. Plagiarism.
I wonder why that could be true, and the brilliant conclusion that they came to is called typology, and they came to the conclusion that, well, those old stories in the Old Testament, they're real, don't get me wrong, but God put those people there and made them do those things and say those things as a precursor. He was practicing to get them right for when Jesus did them. So
a warm-up.
It was a warm-up round. Yeah, you don't want to jump straight to Jesus.
Always stretch.
This is warm-up exercises. So they came to the brilliant conclusion that the fact that all these stories sounded very similar to the stories in the New Testament was because they were foreshadowing the characters. It was a bit like Chekhov's gun. You had to put it in the old version, so when the new version came along, we go, oh, I see.
There it is.
These guys were foretelling what would happening.
Yes.
Like how the Greek gods were the prototypes of the Roman gods.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Jonah and the whale story could be seen as sort of a type of Christ figure because he died and emerges. He's reborn.
Gotcha.
Out of the whale's belly.
Mm-hmm.
So he's being reborn. Or Abraham offering Isaac as a sacrifice, his only begotten son, he offers as a sacrifice to God as Jesus would sacrifice himself to himself for himself for reasons that it was just obsession. He just he thought it would be cool. And so people were like, oh, these old stories sound like the new stories.
Yeah.
So instead of coming to the somewhat rational conclusion that the writers of the new stories base their stories on the old stories as inspiration.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah. They did a mental triple-double, which I know nobody follows Olympic gymnastics as closely as you do, Ray.
Right.
You know that a triple-double is the hardest of all things to pull off in gymnastics. It's when you do a double backflip with three twists.
Oh, yes, yes.
Triple-double.
Yeah.
So,
back in the day, I could do that.
Back in the day, I've seen the footage of you doing that.
I mean, I was on the floor the whole time, but still – pretty impressive.
The skin-tight mankini that you were wearing.
The neon...
neon green.
Yellow.
Mankini. That's why I gave you one for your birthday a couple of years ago, because I was hoping you'd get back into gymnastics. That was my dream for you.
I'm not going to lie to you. I couldn't even get into the mankini, so there's no way I can get back into gymnastics, okay? I couldn't even fit
Well, I think what ruined it for you is you mastered the triple-double. But then you tried to suck your own dick while you were doing the double backflip.
Yeah, which is called the ultimate.
Yeah, it was called, well, they called it the Ray in the end. It was doing a Ray. They still, in gymnastic circles.
To this day.
It's frowned upon because of what happened to you when you did it. And everyone, sadly, who was at the Moscow Olympics in 1980 saw it happen.
Yeah.
But
and
you did, it was a long recovery, but you survived.
It was,
and
it was worth
they
it. It was
sewed it back on. Unfortunately, you'd swallowed half of it.
I was peckish. I was hungry. So, and now today, and this is actually true.
And like Chinese food, you were hungry. Like half an hour later, you were hungry again.
Yeah. That's because I didn't do the testicles with the penis. I should have not stopped. I should have gone all the way. There's a law today, and this is actually true. If you try that today, you have to call the emergency room 30 minutes before you try it so they can be on standby. That's just a fact.
It's actually banned in 47 countries around the world.
I'm here to tell you, I survived that ordeal.
The good thing about it is,
to tell
they banned it immediately after you did it, so you are the uncontested world champion of the Ray maneuver.
Gold.
Yeah, sucking your own dick while doing a triple-double.
I'm a little turned on right now. I'm not going to lie to you.
The Ray triple-double.
A little aroused.
The RTD is how the Ray triple. The RTD is how they call it gymnastics.
Oh, my God. Do you notice that when we talk about God or Jesus, we get really off script because we can't take that seriously, so we do our own shit. But that's just an observation. You just carry on.
Of course, the other RTD
is
Russell T. Davies, who's taking over Doctor Who again.
Can't wait.
Yeah, me
too. He should never be allowed to leave. They should chain his ass to the desk. He's never allowed to leave. I'm done.
where are we? Oh, yeah, fuck. I don't know.
I have no fucking idea.
Now, Friar Pietro, in his letter to Isabella, said that in the version of this painting that he saw, the child has placed his foot in the basket of yarns.
Right.
Now, neither of the major versions of the painting that we have today has a basket of yarns or a baby's foot in it. Not even the X-rays of these paintings have revealed. Oh. They've revealed many things, but not a basket of yarns. Some of the copies of it do have baskets of yarns. None of them that I saw had the baby's foot in the basket of yarns. So the question is, the version that Friar Pietro saw, did he get it wrong in his letter to Isabella? Is he just making shit up? Or maybe the versions that we have aren't that version. Maybe that version has disappeared altogether and we don't have that one. And these are copies or earlier versions or, you know, later versions by Leonardo. We don't really know.
Well, I just assume because it's for the king's secretary, one of the king's favorites, you don't want to fuck that up. So there's going to be a version 1, 1.1, 1.2, 1.0. You're going to play with it and try to really knock it out of the park.
Although we see in the versions, in the x-rays of the versions that we have, there was a lot of changes that he made. And the changes are being made simultaneously on these two paintings. There's like underdrawings in both of them that have been removed in both of them. So it kind of looks like, we'll get into this in a moment, it kind of looks like they were, the two major versions that we have were being done simultaneously in his studio.
Right.
And maybe there was a third one that Pietro saw that has disappeared into the sands of time.
And they might have been experimenting with something different. Yeah.
Now, in this one, in the ones that we have, Mary is looking at the baby Jesus. Her hand, you can only see one of her hands, her right hand, is raised in a similar fashion to Mary's hand in the Madonna of the Rocks paintings that we talked about, sort of holding it up like she's casting a magic spell on Jesus.
Right.
Absolorum de Jesusum. Yeah. Absolorum crucifixionum. Talk you out of him, crucifixion him, because she didn't think it was a good idea. And it looks like she's maybe going to try to stop him from playing with the yarn winder. There's no yarn on it because she's like, hey, you can't, you're not going to fuck. Maybe she's worried he's going to poke himself in the eye with it.
Well, it's a pointy stick.
A little bit pointy stick,
It's a point. Get it away from the child. I don't care that he's, what, roughly 1 year old? How old would you say Jesus
is? Yeah, 1 year old, he's able to see, grasp.
Get the stick away from him.
Yeah, but
he's obsessed. Yeah,
but then her face looks resigned in both versions of the painting. She's like she's gonna take it, and she's like, "Ah, oh, fuck it, he's gonna die anyway, so who cares?" Like, really,
does she know that? I mean, she's probably still trying to get over the ghost raping her two or three times at one night. Mm-hmm. She's got a child; he's 1 year old. Does she know his? I don't know anything about Mary. So did she?
Well, did she he was like. The baby in Family Guy, Stewie.
He was talking.
Right. Yeah, he was talking from a very early age.
He doesn't want to talk. He's a little asshole.
But the first thing baby Jesus ever said to his mother was, "Bitch, I'm going to get crucified. Fucking get used to the idea. You're gonna watch it. Yeah. I'm gonna make you stand there and watch it.
I'm a wood lover, and you can't stop me."
This is my mission. Don't get in bitch.
I'll do it today. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. You'll never know. But you just—you'll
never know when it's coming. But it's coming. Boom. Yeah. Boom. You blink. You turn around. You once, and I'm going to be crucified. You never going to know when it's coming. He was dark, man. He was dark.
He was a little dark there.
Dark. Yeah. He was Damien. Their first name for him was Damien. Damien Jesus Joseph.
Carpentary.
Now, in this the version they think is the first version, the Buccleuch version, there's something weird about her face. The first time I saw this, I thought it was a bad photo. I thought somebody had taken
weird.
There's something
angle.
Looked weird angle on her face. Yeah,
almost flat.
Almost flat. Like, it looks like she ran into the back of a dump truck.
Right. On purpose.
On purpose, yeah. Like in a Roadrunner cartoon.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah. Looks like, something. She hit her with a truck in a Roadrunner cartoon. She's got this flat face. Looks weird. Now, it could be one of these things we've seen with paintings before, particularly Da Vinci. Like, if he's expecting this to be hung high on a wall, like in the Last Supper painting, right? This weird perspectives, and if you're entering from the south side of the room and you're looking up to the right side of the room, it might look good.
Right. He thinks these things through before he touches anything. I mean, this is Leo we're talking about.
But to us, looking at it front on... something looks weird. Baby Jesus's cheeks look like he has
Or he looks like the Joker.
Or he's had a 30-year career playing trumpet with Louis Armstrong. He's got just Satchmo overdeveloped
jowls.
Jowls, yeah. Satchmo cheeks. Yeah. Satchel cheeks is
there we go.
That's where Satchmo's name came from. Satchel cheeks. He had cheeks like satchels, yeah.
Right.
And he is staring deeply into the pointy bit the yarn winder.
He's loving it.
He's naked, got his little baby Jesus peepee there. sans foreskin, the holy foreskin.
I don't know if it's little. It looks about average.
Well, you may think so, based on your experience. This gets painted over in later times.
Yes.
Yeah, when they were like painting over Jesus' dicks. Yeah. That got painted over. And his left hand, which is grasping near the top of the unwinder, has the finger pointed up.
Finger.
Yeah, he's like, this one's going in your ass and this one's going in your eye.
And after I'm
Irish eye.
And after I'm one with this piece of wood, I'll be going up to heaven. Score.
The other thing to notice is there's no halos. Did you just put a gummy? Did you just put some gummies? And you just ate some gummies.
Nope.
Wow. Open up. Poke out your tongue.
Got a
mouthful of gummies. Holy shit.
Look, I have a problem. I have an addiction. Okay? And I'm loving every minute of it. All right? On with the show. It's going to take a while to kick in.
So, Hunter called me yesterday. He said, I've got an audition to do, and my character in this audition scene is smoking a joint. Can you tell me what that looks like? And I was like, right, okay, so here's what you need to do.
Right.
I'm coaching my 21-year-old son on how to act like you're baked and smoking a joint. I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah. Now, if it was vape, you could have given a 2-hour class. Demo.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we?
No halos in these pictures. No halos. Paintings, Ray. No halos. So
we've seen
him do the Mary and Jesus with the halos. We've seen him doing them without the halos. And I still think this is a big deal, the no halo Mary and Jesus in this era. It's more of a naturalistic thing. Like you have to imagine the halos.
Right. Well, Jesus is the human or physical manifestation of God, at least while he was on earth. So yeah, make him human. You know, you don't walk around with a halo blinding everybody all the time. So I think it's a good move.
I think Leonardo was like, look, I've never seen a halo, so I can't paint a halo.
That's a good point.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I paint what I see. I can't see it.
I'm an observer.
So how do I know? How do I paint it?
Yeah. Unless you're going to give me a quick trip to heaven.
My whole thing is about capturing the essence of reality and nature as accurately as possible.
Exactly.
I can't see it. I can't paint it. You can't have it. And fucking deal with it.
I don't care who
you
are.
If you know anything about me, you should know this one thing. If I don't want to do it, I'm not fucking doing it.
And you're going to hear the words fuck you together a lot. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. No halo.
Jesus's eyes. Oh, in this Bichlu version, the background is fairly simple. There's a lake or an ocean, some hills and rocks on the left and right. It's fairly dark. The coloring's dark. There is like a nice flow of physical motion. If you look at it, Jesus is reaching up towards the object. It kind of looks like there's a nice flow between her eyes and his arm and his head. He's reaching up, his fingers pointing to the heaven because that's where he's going to go when he gets on this thing finally. Like there's nice lines. Yeah.
Right.
There's nice lines. It's definitely a Leonardo, or definitely, you know, the work of Leonardo to some degree.
Yeah.
His moist eyes are shiny. There's a sparkle of luster. in his eyes. He's deep in thought. We know that at this stage, Leonardo's trying to capture thought and emotion and intention better than anyone has ever done. And you can definitely see that in this. Like, Mary, not so much. She's just looking down. She's looking resigned, a little bit bored. Right. But Jesus, yeah, he's looking at this thing. You can see he's thinking about it.
This is my future.
I mean, he's like, I could die on this, or I could poke somebody in the eye with it. Maybe you could stick it up your ass. Yeah, knit something. He's trying to figure it out. There's definitely a look of trying to figure out something in his eyes there. Yeah, exactly. It's masterfully done, whoever did it.
Mm-hmm. And the light is amazing.
Now, if you compare this to an earlier Madonna and Child painting that Leonardo did, like the Benoit Madonna that we talked about, Madonna and Child with a Flower from about 1478 to 1480, hugely different paintings. And I would argue huge progression on the behalf of Leonardo. The Benoit looks, I mean, compared to this, looks very primitive. I mean, I couldn't paint it, but very but primitive capable of, by comparison.
So much more. Yeah, the baby's fat. He's unattractive. She looks like she's been 12. Run over by the ugly truck 12 times, and it backed up each time. And just the whole, and it's not pleasing. There's nothing really exciting going on in the background compared to what he's done or what his students did. Such a huge improvement, and you can tell that he has grown as an artist.
Yeah, interestingly, though, in his, the baby is looking at something. I think it's flowers that he's looking at. Carnations. Again, symbolism of something, something, die, something, something. You know, who the fuck knows? Who can remember? We did talk about it at the time, but I can't remember. They have halos in the Benoit Madonna, all this kind of stuff. Again, it's pretty dark. It's pretty simple. So the new one is far superior. I mean, she doesn't look 12 in the new one. She looks like she's more, I don't know, what, 22?
Right.
12 is probably more historically accurate, but she's probably like 14 when she has baby Jesus.
You mentioned sweet spot.
It's interesting, but I don't know, like, for some reason it just doesn't strike me as a Leonardo. You look at the hair, it's dark, it's pretty uninteresting.
It doesn't pop. It's like just there.
It doesn't pop. Yeah, it doesn't pop.
Did he use up all the browns? Because I think he used up all the browns on this one painting, for God's sake.
I think he overbought on brown and he needed
to. We got to get rid of it. We got to unload the browns, people. Everybody pick up a brush and get a brown. Yes, there we go.
There's a few rocks and a few plants, but they're not very interesting. No. They're not very well articulated.
They're not well lit. You could barely see them.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, I think this painting has been touched up and damaged and hasn't aged well and all those sorts of things, which we know affect the color of the paint and the brightness and all of that kind of stuff. But then if you compare it to the second major version, the Lansdowne Madonna. Oh.
Night and day, literally.
Well, yeah, very different. I mean, as I said earlier, the poses of the two characters are almost identical. But this one looks, to me, far more like a Leonardo.
It pops. It literally comes off the page. It literally does. It's amazing.
Far brighter.
Yes.
The curls. There's so much more detail in both Mary's hair.
Yeah.
Baby Jesus's hair, the delicate, finely depicted curls, her sort of veil or bandana or whatever she's wearing.
Right. You got the bandana.
It's far more delicately rendered than in the other one. And of course, the background.
That's what I was going to say. Look at the mountains behind her head versus the one lump in the. Yeah. Buclue, however you say it. There's one little lump in the water, and these have got ranging Swiss Alps here, and you can see the details in them, and they're fucking far away. That's amazing.
And on the left and right of her and baby Jesus, there are streams, rivers, a bridge goes over there. There's a bridge over a river. Yeah. So to me, it looks more like a Da Vinci, but what the fuck do I know? Now, the thing here is the mountains, which look very similar to the Mona Lisa, which is the next major portrait that he does. It's like 5 years later. So there's a suggestion that that's considered the mountains, the Mona Lisa mountains are considered late Da Vinci, something that he did later on. He got into this thing of painting mountains. So this one probably is later than the one without the mountains, I think is the thinking here.
He's still evolving as an artist.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got ideas that he likes to play with. And the Blue Mountains are an idea. Right. Now, it's called the Lansdowne, takes its name from the Marquess of Lansdowne, who owned it in the 19th century. John Henry Petty, Earl Wycombe, and then later the second Marquess of Lansdowne, bought it around 1809.
Right.
Possibly from the Earl of Darnley. It's first recorded in a sale of the Dowager Marchioness of Lansdowne's collection in 1833, but it was withdrawn from sale, remained in the family until 1879, when her daughter sold it to Cyril Flower, later Lord Battersea.
Right.
Then in 1908, it was bought from his widow by the Paris-based art dealers Nathan Wildenstein and René Gimple.
Right.
They consulted Bernard Berenson, who was the leading art expert of the day, in 1909, and he attributed it to Il Sodoma, not to Leonardo.
Oh.
Which was an earlier attribution, yes. Right. So at the time, the thinking was that it was painted by Il Sodoma. Real name Giovanni Antonio Bazzi, but he was known as Il Sodoma.
It's a stage name.
Yes, it's like stage name, Throbbing Glitterous, when you were in a glam metal band in the 80s.
Right. I miss those days.
Half
price pussy I wanted. Go ahead.
The thing I like about this is Il Sodoma means the Sodom, like Sodom and Sodom and gonorrhea. Sodom and
Well, that's just a great name. You sure that's not his porn name? Because it sounds like it's right up there.
It was. It was his porn. It must have been his porn name. God. Like he was like, that guy takes it up the ass, right? Yeah, we'll call him the Sodom.
That's
it. Hey, Sodom.
And the other guy, the Sodomizer. But go ahead.
Yeah. They called him the Sodom as his nickname. And that, like, that's gone down through history.
Like, I'm good with that. No, that's fine.
Yeah. You want to call me the ass fucker? Sure.
I can sign my name. Would you like me to sign that? I can sign that on your breast. Yeah, there you go.
Sodom and Gomorrah. I love the Sodom and Gomorrah story. I mean, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. Have we ever talked about the Sodom and Gomorrah story?
There's been so much. I feel like in a non-chronological way, we've covered the entire Bible, but that's just my feeling. I don't know. Who was the guy that his daughter is a guy? He was drunk and he raped them. Anyway, let's not do that.
That was Lot, I think.
Lot. Okay.
Yeah. So it's part of that story. But the whole thing about how the angels went down to Sodom to investigate their crimes against nature.
Right.
And the men of the city came out and said, hey, we want to fuck these angels. Because once you've had angel ass, you can never go back. Yeah, no. It's the greatest of all ass.
Of the ass.
Sweetest. Yeah. And
you ever had angel ass, man?
Lot was like, ah, look, you don't want to fuck these angels. Take my daughters. Just take my daughters. Fuck them.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we'll do them later, but we really think the angels are what we want. And Lot's like, no, please, just take my wife, take my daughters, fuck them, please.
I'm jonesing like, no. for some anal, angel anal.
Yeah, angel anal, angel ass.
Hey, Anyway,
you know, if you do ass to mouth with an angel, it's a whole other thing. Yeah. It's not only gay if you do it with Ray.
It probably tastes like Skittles.
It's A-okay. Skittles. Yeah.
If you do ass to mouth with an angel, it tastes like Skittles. I think that's a fact.
That's actually the, funnily you should mention that, that's the one of the tracks on my next country album is I had ass to mouth with an angel. It tasted like Skittles, they say.
I must have got a bad angel. Died,
I fucked it too. It didn't taste the same anyway.
Tasted like turd. Anyway. The turd of love.
The turd of love.
Which is the name of the song.
That's the name of the album. That's the name of the album. It's the turd of love.
Turd of love. Oh, what's the album cover? No, don't tell me. It's probably Goatsy.
Did you see the thing I posted? The ancient Roman sculpture of Goatsy?
Oh, I think I did. And I saw the whole Mary and the JJ thing going on there.
Oh, the Vagina Mary painting? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I love those.
Ancient Goatsy. Gotcha.
Anyway, where were we? Sodom, Gomorrah, Il Sodoma. They thought they attributed this painting to up until, like, this is 1909.
Wow.
Now, I looked up Il Sodoma. He wasn't one of Leonardo's assistants, far as I could tell.
Ah.
Never met Leonardo, never went to Milan, as far as we know, but seems to have picked up some of Leonardo's stylings and techniques along the way. Must have seen a Leonardo at the very least and gone, oh, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Now,
that's a good idea.
During restoration work around 1911, this painting was transferred off of walnut. It was also done oil on walnut to canvas.
Oh.
And several alterations were made, including removing the loincloth covering.
Oh, right.
The baby's genitals.
Yeah.
And the thing. Yeah, the baby, little Jesus's ding dong. The Jesus ding, and the fingers of the Virgin's left hand. Now, her left hand goes under his right arm, so I don't know why fingers were added to that. That would be weird. Maybe they wanted the fingers to come over his arm.
Right.
They're like, oh, Leonardo just couldn't paint fingers, so we can fix that. We'll just paint some fingers over the top.
Yeah.
Anyway, this led me to wonder, how the fuck do you transfer a painting from walnut to canvas?
I wondered, but I didn't look into it.
No, well, that's not surprising.
Thank you.
What is surprising is that you even wondered. This was transferred from wood to canvas and then back to wood.
What?
So apparently here's the process for transferring a painting from wood to canvas, as described by Henry Mogford in his Handbook for the Preservation of Pictures.
Sure.
Smooth sheets of paper are pasted over the painted surface of the panel and a layer of muslin over that. The panel is then fixed face down to a table and the wood planed away from the back until it was as thin as a plane may safely go.
Oh.
Then the remainder scraped off with a sharp instrument such as a razor. The ground of the painting was then removed by solvents or scraping until nothing remains but a thin skin of colour pasted over with paper and held together by the muslin. A prepared canvas is then attached to the back of the paint layer using the same method as was used for lining pictures. When the glue is dried, the paper and muslin are removed by careful damping.
God dang, that is intense.
Yeah.
Work.
You have to plane the wood gently away from the paint.
I don't have the patience for that shit.
Or the skill.
Ouch. You didn't have to. Right. I would think that would be fairly obvious.
Okay, so the best insult I've received in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
You know, in Wing Chun, we have the wooden dummies and we do forms on the dummies.
Yeah.
So there's like 100 forms, and I know three, and I've been learning the first one for about a year. And I have to do it in my next grading, so I have to be good at it.
Are you in the special class?
I was demonstrating it
right
for one of my sifus the other day. I demonstrated it the whole thing through. And then I turned to him afterwards and giving this look, like, what do you think? And he said, he's a Scotsman, right? Short, ripped, fit as fuck Scotsman. Looks at him bald. He looks at me and he goes, well, you've got the sequence of moves down. And I was like, fuck, that is cold, man. You've got the sequence down.
Yeah, you've got the minimal, the smallest amount down. That's like when Heather turns to me, she goes, "Well, you got the mechanics right. It just wasn't good in any way."
Yeah. Well, you got your dick in the pussy. Yeah, I mean, that's
it was in something. Right. Yeah. Right.
So, well, you've got the sequence. You got the sequence down. Yeah. You got the sequence of moves down.
Right. Did you cry right there, or did you wait till you got home? Because I would have cried right there.
No, I laughed my ass off, and then I've spent the last 2 weeks telling everybody at Kung Fu. And then I mentioned it to him the other day. He and Chrissy and I were talking, and I said, "Oh, dude, that insult! I've had so much fun out of that." And he goes, "Oh, I say that to everybody. Don't take it personally."
No, I thought it was just for me. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good comeback.
Yeah, you get the sequence down. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where were we?
That's how they transfer a painting.
That's
now, the
amazing.
Painting was bought
right
in 1928 by Robert Redford.
Sure.
Robert Redford, Reford, a Canadian industrialist and shipping magnate, also under the belief that it was a arsefucker painting by Il Sodoma.
Yeah, good point.
Interesting thing about his name, Il Sodoma. Il is the masculine version of the in Italian, and ill words normally have an O at the end of them. Il Sodomo. Words ending in A, nouns ending in A are normally feminine, so would have to be you'd have to use the female version of the preposition. Right. You use la Sodoma, Il Sodomo, la Sodoma, but it's Il Sodoma, which does happen from time to time in Italian, and for no particular reason. You say to Italian teachers, well, why is this fucking wrong? And they go, don't ask questions. Just is.
So I imagine if he was an artist and he was okay with that name, little niceties about grammar probably didn't matter fuck all to him. Mm-hmm. But that's a guess.
Well, it probably means that sodomy in Italian is considered a female act, because if you're fucking a guy up the ass,
not
you're...
the way I do it. Oh, right. Sorry, you were talking. Sorry.
So he bought it in 1928. In the 1930s, it underwent X-ray and ultraviolet examination for the first time, which surprised me that they had the technology to do X-ray and ultraviolet stuff in the 1930s without turning people into the Incredible Hulk. I think that's why we had a lot of Incredible Hulks
coming around.
Out in the 30s. That's history, people. Look it up. Led by the art historian Wilhelm Schwieder. Now, he concluded at the time that the baby Jesus and the landscape were done by Leonardo. And the rest of it, basically Mary, were done by one of his Milanese pupils, assistants.
Okay, so he did some, the other guy did some more, and because he's not going to spend all of his time on one painting. He's got a shop to run. I mean, if that's what happened, that makes sense because it's a collaborative affair. Yes?
Yeah. But if it means Leonardo did any of this, the value of it is going to go up. I don't know what Robert Redford paid for it in 1928, but if it all of a sudden gets the rubber stamp as being a Da Vinci or a part half Da Vinci.
Hey, millions.
He's going to make out like a podcaster.
Why isn't that caught on? Why isn't that saying caught on?
I know, right? Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Make out like a podcaster, yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, he loaned it to the New York World's Fair in 1939, and it got damaged.
Fuck, son of a... Sorry, go ahead.
And more restoration work had to be done on it. Then his family put it up for auction in 1972, but by then... the attribution had reverted to it being the work of arsefucker.
Oh, my God. You should have sold it while you could. Yeah,
he should have sold it when he could, man. Yeah. So the price dropped. It was then bought back by Wildenstein and Company, the guys that owned it back in the early 1900s.
Right.
Who arranged for it to be transferred back off of canvas onto wood panel.
For fuck's sake. Yes.
In 1976. Then they sold it as a Leonardo to its current owner in 1999.
Hmm.
So at some point between 1976 and 1999,
right,
they were able to get enough art historians to agree that it's probably a Leonardo. Yeah.
That sounds like pulp and dump, but I'm no expert. Yes.
The Taschen book I have, Leonardo, the Complete Paintings, the 2019 edition by German art historian Frank Zollner, attributes it to Salai.
What?
With a question mark. Yeah. Not to Sodoma, not to Leonardo,
right,
but to Salai, who was also an ass fucker and also could have been called Il Sodoma, but as was Leonardo.
It probably was. Wow.
So a lot of confusion about this. But as I said, I don't know how you feel, but to me it looks more like a Leonardo than the other one.
Absolutely. I totally agree. It's everything. It checks all the boxes.
Maybe his students were just getting better at copying his style by then. Exactly. But I don't know. Now, the question then is, how do historians work out which versions are by Leonardo and which aren't?
Right.
And it turns out there are various ways, ranging from just looking at them and going, yeah, or nah.
Feels like a Leo.
And we've talked about this before in episodes where there have been paintings which, you know, scholars have – you've had experts try and decide – they swear black and blue that this painting is a Leonardo, and other experts who swear that this one's not, and so they cancel each other out. It's fairly ineffective way of trying to determine the attribution of a painting. So another approach is more scientific and more technical, using infrared reflectography and multispectral imagery.
Use them every day.
I mean, you wrote the book on those two things.
It was a graphic novel, but still.
Oxford professor and world-leading Leonardo expert Martin Kemp, who I've never reached out to be on this show for some reason. And one of his graduate students, Teresa Crow Wells, analyzed this painting in the early 1990s and on the Buccleuch.
Right.
And as I mentioned earlier, one of their discoveries was that both paintings have the same underdrawings that were made by Leonardo directly on the wood panel.
Right.
Now, here's the question I have about that. If this painting was taken off a wood panel and put onto canvas and then taken back off of canvas and put onto a new wooden panel, how the fuck they would know what was on the original wooden panel?
I guess there was enough left. Even though they shaved off 99% of it, I guess there was enough to see the etchings. And that's literally a guess on my part, yeah.
Yeah, has to be something like that. Amazing. There was enough left for them to spot stuff, and so what this suggests is that these paintings weren't copied from an earlier version or from studies that he had done with chalk or anything like that.
Right.
They're being done in real time, and he's designing them in real time simultaneously and then changing his mind and
drawing something.
Painting over the top of these underdrawings.
Right.
So
right.
In one of these underdrawings, there's a group of figures that includes Joseph making a baby walker for Jesus.
Sure, because he's 1 year old, he still needs a walker, but that's fine. Don't worry about it.
And Joseph was a carpenter, and how do you tell that story? Well, he's making the greatest baby walker of all time.
But then he gets the axe.
Of course, Jesus was like, dude, I'm God. That's right. I don't need a baby walker.
I'm not a God. I'm the God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm good. All good.
I'm good. I don't need a baby walker. Thank you very much. I'll just fly. I can walk on water, motherfucker. Yeah. You really think I need a baby walker? Like, I can seriously.
Float up
How
to heaven.
Dumb are you? I know you're dumb. Yeah. I knew you were dumb when you bought the whole God impregnated yes, my virgin wife story, but seriously.
Yes. A spirit came down and visited her 3 or 4 times. Well, did she tell you that she moaned the entire night and came twice?
Yeah.
I bet she let that out.
Yeah. And that soldier that keeps visiting her every night is just biggest delivering tickets, the milk.
Right.
Yeah. Your biggest tickets.
That's how
Jesus,
I do.
Get a fucking clue, Joseph.
Where were we?
Yeah, so it's interesting cool. that these paintings seem to have been painted simultaneously. Like he said, it's a studio, right?
Yeah. And you sit there. I'll stand behind you too.
My guess is that he did do one for Robert Tay, the secretary of Louis. And other people saw it and said, hey, can I have one of those?
Yeah, I like the stick.
And whilst he wasn't interested in doing Isabella's portrait for the money,
mm-hmm.
he would allow his assistants to do commissions, particularly of something if he was proud of it. And he seems to have been proud of this.
Exactly.
I think this was interesting, is innovative. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I killed it. I fucking crushed it with that one. Leo the Crusher is what he called himself for a while.
Normally I'm the ass blaster, right, Salai? But on this one, I really think...
I was calling myself the sodomizer, but now this other guy has taken that. And so these versions, now he probably did do some work on these versions, even if they were copied. But like, again, if he'd done the original, he could have just copied that. Why all of the underdrawings that didn't make it onto these ones? Now, maybe he was doing all three simultaneously.
Well, it's either that or just the way Leonardo's head works. You know, how can I make it better? What did I miss the first time? What new technique or what flash or bouncing of light? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he said, okay, that was good. Let me see what I can do now. It could be that, or it could be that they did all three at the same time.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to finish something and then start to add bits and pieces to it. But then the question is, why does one of these, why do they have different backgrounds?
Yeah,
if they're being painted simultaneously.
Right.
Why do they have very different backgrounds? Why? And he's just churning them out, right?
Right.
You paint this, paint, you know, you're telling these guys what to paint. So there's something going on here and it's kind of confusing. But Martin Kemp seemed to suggest that they were painted at the same time with Leonardo overseeing both and probably painting bits of both himself.
Right. A little touch here and there.
And probably painting more of the Lansdowne than the Buccleuch because it has more of his touches to it, the hair, the background, that kind of stuff. But here's – it gets even crazier, right? At least 5 of the surviving versions of the painting. I said there was like 40 odd copies of it.
Right.
In at least 5 of them, they have the little scene of Joseph building the baby walker.
What the hell? Did someone say, oh, I heard that he took that out. I think we should do it and put it back in. I mean, how in the hell did this happen? That's an incredible story.
It is.
Yeah.
Unless the people who painted the later copies had a TARDIS and they went back and they saw the preliminary drawings,
and they went,
didn't stick around to see the finished thing. They just went, oh, I got it now, thanks, and they took off.
Took a picture and took off. Yeah.
It's really interesting. Like maybe, I don't know how that ended up in it. Maybe they were being painted in his studio as well before he decided to eliminate that. They were done before these other versions, the major versions, were finished.
Well,
maybe it was a painting competition with his students. He goes, all right, everyone paint this, and then a bunch of them finished, and he was like, nah, that sucks, actually. Let's get rid of that baby walker bullshit. I don't know what I was thinking. That was crazy.
When I'm looking at these, I'm like, where in the fuck are you going to put Joseph, some other guys, and the fact that he's building a walker? I mean, I think it would be too much – it would detract from Baby Jesus and Baby Jesus Mama. So I think it was, if it was in there, I think it was a very wise decision to take it out. And I'm not surprised as far as aesthetics goes, but yeah, it just seems like it would be too much, too convoluted, too crowded for a painting. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, besides, I think so. Joe's, I think he decided that too.
Father. He's not the father. Fuck him.
No. He's the I don't know, stepfather, if
gatekeeper,
at best.
Not gatekeeper, placeholder.
Really? Didn't even keep that gate. Didn't keep it closed. Should have kept that gate closed.
Could have guarded it better.
So, Friar Pietro, when he was writing to Isabella, said that Leonardo had two of his apprentices painting portraits into which he sometimes adds a few touches. So, you know, we as you suggested before, referring back to Verrocchio's studio, it isn't this great romantic idea of Leonardo alone, sitting by himself with his dick getting sucked, painting.
Putting a dab of paint. No. It's a workshop. Chop, chop.
It's a workshop. Yeah. Chop, chop. Work, chop, chop is what he called it. Chop, chop. Work, chop, chop. It was like getting a chair made in a factory by a major designer craftsman, and then they push out 100 of those chairs, right?
Right.
He was making money.
As long as the chair works.
Yeah. You don't ask who glued the leg to the chair.
Oh, did the master do that part? I really need to know.
Or some clothing designed by, I don't know, whoever, like a Gucci handbag.
Right.
You don't go, did Bobby personally. Gucci personally, do the hand stitching on the bag? No, motherfucker. No. He got it done by, slave labor in China.
Because that would ruin his nails. I don't know. Does he have podcaster's nails?
Da Vinci's. That's what I want. Yeah. Chewed to the quick because you can't pay the bills. That is the story of the Madonna of the Sidewinder and Leonardo's life in Florence. Not doing shit he doesn't want to do and then doing multiple versions of the shit that he does want to do, but how much of it he actually did, we don't know. Hey! Well, that is the end of that story. We'll be back next time with probably more Leonardo, the way we go. Mona Lisa, I think, probably next time, but no guarantees. Who the fuck knows? I haven't read ahead in the book. I don't know what's coming next.
Maybe